Hi everyone, and welcome to another episode of Living on Blockchain. Today we are speaking to Shobhit. Shobhit is the co-founder at Shovel Company. Over the last decade, he's worked extensively in the startup world. He's worked on his own products. He's also worked, in the revenue generating product of Gojek. His startup was acquired by them, and post that, now he's obviously working on Shovel, which is basically on a mission to create infrastructure tools for developers. And they are creating a DCN, a social graph infrastructure for building rich personalized applications. So it is more geared off towards decentralized identity and how that will change the way users interact with Web3 applications. His team consists of his co-founders as well, and they are all set for a beta launch in January. It was a very exciting conversation. I think this one would be especially good for engineers and folks who are building in this space, looking at more B2B side of things. I can't wait for you guys to hear this. Let's deep dive right in. Hi, Shobhit. How are you doing today?
Hey, Tarusha. I'm doing well. Just enjoying my day. How are you?
Thank you so much for making the time to speak to me. I'm doing well. Thank you so much for asking. So for our listeners, Shobhit, can you tell them a little about your background and how you get around to where you are right now and what you're building?
Oh, my God. Like, it's more of a historical narrative question.
Yes, okay. Yes. Just to set the context for everybody.
Understood. Okay, so I'm Shobhit. I currently run this startup called Shovel Company. Okay, I have been working on startups for a really long time, and I have been in technology. I've been actually programming for a very, very long time. I've been coding from since I was 8, 9 years old. I got into startups in 2012, and 2013 is when I started myself for the very first time. At that time, I was building a product like Zoom. WebRTC was an upcoming technology back in the day, and meeting room software was pretty bad, right? Like, it's kind of bad in terms of UX, but so that's where we were. I think I was very young and dumb, so not much happened in that startup. I was prioritizing a lot of wrong things, and it didn't go well. In 2014, I started another startup. This time I was, again, in the software space. I was working on this up-and-coming trend called DevOps.
Okay.
That time it was slightly new. And I was doing consulting for a lot of startups. Through that, I ended up working with a lot of fast-paced Indian startups that we know are big companies today. Around 2015, we were doing pretty well. We were any good software, deep tech consulting business, we were looking to open up offices in Berlin or San Francisco. But coincidentally, we found an Indonesian startup called Gojek. Right? At that time, Gojek was pretty new. We got an introduction through Sequoia Capital, or now PKXV, who were about to invest into them. And then we started working with them, and I love the founder over there, and we kind of resonated. I always wanted to build a product, and they were looking for people to take that part from them, right? So we got acquired into Gojek. My co-founder from my startup became CTO at Gojek at that time, and I was I was running after looking after their transport business overall, the product engineering, and also the engineering platform. Right, so Gojek is three companies in one, right? It's a transport business, a payment business, and then let's say food delivery business. So all of these things are sandwiched together. A transport would be pretty much like what Uber is, right? An on-demand ride hailing business that way. Right? Anyways, the core platform was what I primarily worked on. I was there for 5 years. Saw company grew from tens of millions to tens of 10 billion, right? So that was a very fast growth sandwiched in those 5 years for me. Learned a lot. By the time it was 2020, company was pretty big. We were upwards of 5,000-ish people at that time. We're near approaching that number. Right. And company was getting ready for IPO. And So the nature of the work has also changed, and I was looking for something different. So I decided to move out and started Shovel Company. We started work. So we have only basic idea of, you know, we want to work on something, you know, we want to work at the infrastructure layer of the internet, right? That's the primary idea, right? And that's where, because I've always been a tool builder of sorts, right? And I always appreciate a tool when, you know, it fits for the job, right? So that's where the core idea was. And we started working in that place. I was anyways pretty much deep into engineering myself. So natural place for me to start was in the cloud market. Right. So 2021, we started building this product called Odet. Odet. So the core idea was, like, you know, as the larger ecosystem architectures of companies evolve, it becomes very hard to identify and know where what it is, right? Like, it's just like, you know, you never have a map of what the things are. So Odet was the map we were trying to build, right? So Odet is a small river in France, and world's oldest 3D map is actually of that river, right? So that's where we got the name. And we were building that product. We worked at it for a year, and then we kind of pivoted into Web3 because, like, at some point we concluded, you know, cloud and SaaS feels like a late stage market to me. And we were more keen to go and, you know, think about, like, where is the emerging technology space, right? So I was more interested into that. And that's where the Web3 people were loudest. So we said, okay, let's start from there and see where it leads, right? So somewhere middle of 2022, we decided to go into Web3. I spent like 3-4 months. By the time it was September, we concluded the primary problem is around digital identity and, like, and all of this notion of decentralization, right? Like, it's a whole spectrum of, like, rational to irrational, what decentralization can mean, right? Some of it is very rational, like, it is based out of take rate of a marketplace, right? Like I was running a marketplace business myself, like, with several million drivers every day on the platform, right? And a food delivery business like a Swiggy, right? So you can understand, okay, this is pretty rational because you can look at a balance sheet and say, oh, this is the money we are talking to decentralize, right? Then the slightly above one is, like, slightly more philosophical in nature, right? It's like big tech versus user privacy tracking, that kind of a fight, right? And then, like, above that, it's like kind of a that's where we are in the gray territory, right? Like, for example, central banks and monetary policy, and then countries and sovereignty, right? So there is a whole spectrum of these ideas of where how individuals correlate with a larger institution. And, you know, and that's where I felt like it's pretty much sounds like a digital identity problem. And we started pursuing it from that perspective. And that's where we got into, that's where we are, right? So we realized that, you know, there is an emerging account systems that we are coming up for every end user, right? And how do we accelerate growth of those account system is how we landed to DCN.
Okay. So just to understand, is DCN something what you're doing at Shovel, basically you're building this DCN, is it similar to DITs or what ENS is doing?
Okay. So let's dig into what DID ENSs are, right? Like, and then I'll answer back to what we are doing and how it's similar and different.
Right.
So DIDs are pretty interesting, right? Because DIDs are just like an IDs, right? Like, let's say you have an Aadhaar card in India, right? Like, you get, everybody gets an identifier, right? And DIDs is a way to create an identifier. But they are not like a very big, and they are slightly smart identifier in a way because that they can resolve into some data, right? Like, you can try and resolve a DID and you can get us some data around it, right? So anything can be a DID. Now it connects back to crypto world very easily because, like, a cryptographic key can be represented as a DID, right? So people can store DIDs and they don't have to worry about, you know, that this is a cryptographic key or this is a user profile or this is something else, right? They can just store DIDs, right? So it creates a great standardization layer that way, right?
At
the software layer to interact. Now, ENS is slightly different. ENS maybe is more closer to DNS or IPNS, right? It's like a naming thing, right? Now, so why do we need naming? Is because underlying infra changes all the time, right? Like, for example, let's say if you've done a website hosting ever, right? You will give tell an IP address, right? Unless you deployed on GitHub or now you're deployed on AWS, right? It will change that IP address, right? But everything should work. The end user knows the name, right? So that it is, so data is what for the is for the infrastructure layer, and the naming system is for the user layer, right? So they are like two sides of the same coin in that way, right? Now both of them are crucial for a account system, right? Both of them are like critical part of account system, right? Because the data is kind of the software interoperability side, and ENS is like, you know, more of a consumer interoperability. Right. So both of them are two sides of the same account system, right? DCN is slightly different, right? Because DCN is about contacts, right? So let's say you have an account, right? But you will have some contacts, right? Like let's say you have a Google account on your phone or Android phone, and then you have the contact app, right? In which you have a bunch of contacts, right? Which are associated with your account. Right, so DCN is about those contacts and the interoperability of those contacts. Right? We believe, like, you know, social networking as a concept is kind of moving towards the protocol layer. And you know, very simple questions, right? Like, why can't I annotate physical things? Right, let's say for example, I read a URL or a website or Wikipedia page, right? Why can't I leave comments for my friends to see? Right, these kind of things. Only possible if we stop thinking in terms of the interfaces of the current websites, right, or the current products, right? So this kind of a discovery of people and contacts is moving towards the protocol layer, and that's that is what we are trying to visualize when we are trying to do DCN.
Okay, so again, this is like a lot of information that has been thrown at the listeners, you know, after your explanation. If you had to explain what DCN is in perhaps a line or explain to people in a way that, you know, they'll understand it immediately to a layperson, how would you describe it in one or two lines?
Okay, so first of all, I believe DCN is more of engineer facing product, right? While let's say an app, let's say a contact app that we are making called Rolodex is a consumer facing product, or a directory app for a community is a consumer facing product, right? So how I would describe DCN is that DCN is primarily interoperability of contacts, like, so that, you know, let's say you start an application, most of the applications are fun when you have your friends over there, right? But the problem is, how do we get those friends over there? To do that, we have this infrastructure that allows you to interoperate your contact to different places, right? So that's what DCN solves for.
So interoperability of contacts the decentralized world. That will be one, you know, succinct way of putting it, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So can you give us like a use case example for this?
Okay. So very simple one, right? That's what we are trying to work with today, right? So the philosophy that we have is like, you know, once you are building an infra like this, you have to also bootstrap it with the right set of applications in the beginning. Right. So the first application we built is a basic contact app, right? It's like, it's a personal relationship management app where you have like a power user interface to a contact app in some sorts. Another application that we are trying to build is a directory app for a community, right? Okay. So a lot of communities are actually running on WhatsApp, right? Or some groups or the other, right? And a lot of times you are joining a group where you really don't know anybody, but you joined for some purpose of the group, right? But you would like to browse who are the people over here, right? So a lot of WhatsApp groups, a lot of good run community actually maintain a member directory, right? Where it's kind of an Excel sheet, which is just in the link to the description of the group, right? That's literally the next step that we are making. It's one of the use case. Right. So, and we are trying to also work towards the creator economy use case, right? Where a lot of these problems are around, you know, who owns the end customer? Is it the platform? Is it the creator? Right. So that's the primary build area that we are focused on. I hope I answered your question.
So, you know, you've kind of answered what kind of applications that you envision being built on the platform. And that is essentially what I was trying to ask you about, what would be like a good use case. So now the concept of every user and agent having their own keys, it can be, it is very intriguing. And I do think that that is the essence of decentralization, because, you know, if you want to have the kind of freedom, then you need to take the onus of some responsibility as well. But how does your company foresee this, you know, changing the landscape of digital identity? And what can be, say, potential benefits for individuals and users, individuals and businesses? Sorry.
I think the freedom one need to touch upon is a very important one. It's more, but it's
right.
Slightly philosophical one, right? Sometimes, you know, in the cold-hearted capitalist consumerist world, such kind of rationales are not very effective a lot of times, right? So I think the most important thing that will change once everybody have cryptographic keys is that there will be no more forms, right? So think of it in this way. Most of the Web2 businesses right now have armies of product managers who are right now using tools like Mixpanel to make sure that user crosses some data input on their website, or their app, so that they reach to a stage where they can finally do something, right? And a lot of that is important, right? Because, hey, I don't know who this person came to my application, right? So I have to ask for information, right, before I can do anything. So everybody has to create a new account every time with a new website.
New platform. Right?
Or a
new
application.
New platform, you need to make an account.
And what do you do, right? You are filling your name again. You are filling your age again. For the 100th time, you have to select the...
Basically,
you have to verify again, right?
It's the same thing that you have to fill time and again with any new interaction, any new platform that you're thinking of using.
Exactly, right? And nobody likes it, right? Not the user, not the company.
Right.
Both parties hate it, by the way, right? And because we do, and there here is the solution, right? The whole, like, if you think about it, right? Majority of finance industry problems are in KYC and fraud, right? Who should get, right? So all of, and KYC problem is a form filling problem.
That's true.
Largely. So I think, like, the fundamental problem around, I just believe the experience is going to be significantly different, right? When you go to a place, you join a new platform, suddenly they know you. Now you're a valued customer suddenly on the day one. You don't have to be gamified for 30 days to really be of any value to them, right? You can actually start. And you can also port your friends to that, right? Like the experience of joining these places is going to change, right? Like how internet feels is going to change. And I just believe that way.
It'll fundamentally change the experience, I think. And that, you know, once the user experience changes, obviously the stickiness increases. And people would, there is no resistance,
right?
When you're trying to onboard any new user.
Like lot of fights that is going on digital marketing side, right? People spending on keywords and this and that. Like a lot of times the people are just trying to make sure that somebody fills the form.
So that kind of changes with your product.
Yeah, I don't want forms, right? Like nobody likes it. I don't want passwords. I don't want forms.
That should be
I
your
don't have
title.
To remember. Yeah, but like that is what is going to change in the how users' digital identity is carried on the internet.
Yes, it will fundamentally change the way people are interacting with applications online. So more power to you guys for thinking of something, you know, which is a big problem, but it is such a large part of everyday usage of how, you know, users interact with any platform that nobody really thought actively of solving it in this manner.
Yeah, I think, like, see, again, right, like all of us are building on shoulders of giants, right? Like we are just trying to look at history and push it a little bit further. I think a lot of people have been trying to work on it forever. I think this there's this guy called Kim Cameron. He was identity architect in Microsoft since 90s, I guess. They have been running a conference called Internet Identity Workshop since early 2000s. And a lot of these people have been talking about how internet has a missing identity layer. right? Like how with Bitcoin, we are talking about internet has a missing money abstraction. Similarly,
Right.
we have a missing identity abstraction, right?
Yeah.
And because of that, we have so many other things that we have to do as a workaround, right? So it's just
Absolutely.
like looking back and going back, exploring and studying those ideas and trying to see how can they be done again in 2023 or 2024 now.
Right now. Awesome. So, again, like perhaps the spirit of your company, you've touched upon it quite a bit already. We could term it like, you guys are on a mission to build basically the very intrinsic blocks that will help builders in general in scaling more effectively, giving their users a better experience. So, what is the significance of perhaps this particular mission, and how is your company contributing to the toolset available for those who are actively shaping in the digital landscape, apart from the DCN layer that you're creating?
I think so a lot of it is actually software is very interesting as a concept, right? Because it is just a abstract representation of things we are talking about, right? So it's not really something
yeah.
specific. It is how we talked about it, interpreted it, and implemented it, right? It's just that, right? So I think a lot of protocol building and infrastructure building on the software side is about actually traversing the layers of the software that exists today and going to the core layer and trying to see where the integrations need to be done, right? I think so this basically means you are working with everybody, right? Like
yeah.
end of the day, software is going to run on a VM or somewhere, right? So you have to work with cloud providers. It has to, in our case, we are very working closely around IPFS ecosystem, right? Like, so networking
right.
stack comes from that place, right? And then payments infrastructure is what we are trying to build with DeFi and crypto, right? So a lot of integrations to that direction also comes from that side, right? So it's I think it's more about how does it fit into all of this is where most of the energy goes, right? I think I answered your question, or I missed something here.
No, you have you've mentioned all of these tooling the tooling kits and tools that you're creating for people who are actively changing the landscape in the digital realm. So thank you for answering that. Apart from what you guys are doing at Shovel and being like co-founder there, you've been actively involved in pushing, knowledge. And just I do think that builders in the space do have that onus that they do need to create more awareness and create more educational pieces for people to become more aware so that they can become a part of this revolution, so to say, the tech revolution. So how do you perhaps because there are a lot of external activities and you are running your own startup, how do you contribute, how do you manage to first of all balance it, and how does this kind of contribute to your overall vision of the future?
So I think I think I'm slightly lucky that way, because this is my third startup now, right? And I have been in startups and programmer for a really, really long time. So a lot of it is just second nature, right? So and because of years of practice that have gone. But you're right, right? A lot of it is an education problem also, right? And
right,
I think that's
yeah.
that's kind of a problem for any emerging technology, right? That a lot of it
is
also
true. It's
a lot
like a
of
chicken
it
and
is,
an egg problem, right?
Exactly.
That kind of comes into play, yeah.
It is just natural, right? Because if you are trying to, like, everybody is looking for, where is the first genesis point and how, around which, how do we bring in more people to extend the idea further, right? So I've been like a part of the technical ecosystem for a really long time, right? So I've been involved in a lot of open source projects since very, very early days. Right. So it's just like, reading through code, reviewing somebody else's project, giving feedback. I think these are very hard skills to learn. Now I look back, right? Like as in I got lucky that way when I was not thinking much about them, I was doing it. Right.
Okay.
But these are not very easy, right? Like sitting in India, especially, right? Like where a lot of teams that you really want to collaborate are less in India, more outside. Sadly, that's the nature of the space we are in today. And you have to work across like a 12-hour time zone difference, and then collaborate at a high frequency in the search to go anywhere, right? You have to do that, right? So it's a challenging act, but it's fun.
Right. Yeah, it is. I think it's once, you know, it becomes a part of what you're doing, and then it starts coming easily to you because, you know, as you mentioned, you've been doing it for a while. So then striking that balance then becomes easy. It's only when, you know, you start off something, if, you know, initially that there are certain hiccups. But, you know, that is the advantage when you do start something young. I think that is goes back to the older age, right? If you are if you inculcate children with the right set of habits, you know, then they'll follow it, like, in well into their adulthood.
Like,
and then
this
it
is
becomes
the whole
a part of
reason
their life,
why
right?
We have, this is the whole reason why we have, like, CBSE board in India.
Right. Okay, so I come from ICSE, but I understand, you know, the feeling. I have a lot of folks who've studied in CBSE board as well. But yeah, that is, I do think that ultimately, you know, anything that you think should come easily to you, it'll only come easily to you when you make it a part of your daily routine. And, you know, you're kind of measuring it and making sure that, you know, you're somehow doing it, and it'll come easily to you then, because it's becomes deeply ingrained in and becomes a part of your personality, perhaps.
Exactly. Like, it's very much like, you know, like the Zen style of thinking, right? Like like a sharp rock, flowing water smoothens it out over a period of time, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. That's a good example to give. So, you know, you've also co-authored the Observability, sorry, by TFOCN. So how does this work into, you know, what you're doing with Shovel, and why is this crucial for the success of decentralized systems and infrastructure? Also talk a little about the white paper so that our listeners can gain some insights, because I'm sure not everybody has read this white paper.
No, I doubt, like, unless you are actually deep into, like, that space,
tech.
It's not really relevant
if
for anybody
really,
else.
It's a niche, right? Yeah, it's exactly.
Yeah,
it's a
corner of internet.
Absolutely,
right?
Yeah.
Right. So I'll tell you a little bit about, So I think I mentioned that I've been in DevOps space for a long time. And then because of that, So DevOps is pretty interesting, right? Like, now it has kind of become a job title, but initially it started as a philosophy of, like, engineers or developers doing their own operations, right? So it's kind of like, you know, it was a front runner in full stack mindset to a certain extent, right? Where, like, because it's the emergence of, in the Web2 world, right? Like, the SaaS ecosystem took over, and then we eventually had cloud companies like AWS and GCP and whatnot. Right. So now anybody can rent a server just through an API, right? Like, effectively. So a lot of it is just an API integration that we are trying to do. And that just started, like, a lot of cloud world. And DevOps is primarily philosophy from that world, right? Now, so as I think in 2010s, a lot of cloud patterns got matured. Right, a lot of companies start seeing scale and start facing scale related problems, and then CNCF got made last decade, where, you know, larger companies were pooling the technologies that they were making, right? So a lot of technologies around, let's say, Kubernetes or Prometheus and whatnot, like sorry for dropping words, have been built in these companies and pooled together as an open source group, right? Like, it's quite similar to how we had an Apache Foundation back in 90s, right? And lot Linux Foundation and the Apache Foundation and how they incubate project, right? Something like that, right? So a lot of cloud technology started getting incubated over there, right? Now, in that space, like, typically there is, So there are, I think, the two important part of DevOps world is, like, the CI/CD infrastructure, which is more about how can we ship quickly, often, with speed and with reliability, right? It focuses on that problem. And then it's about observability and reliability. It's about, you know, what is running? Is it running or not running? Or is it running fine? Or how do we know? Right? It's the question around that, right? So it comes from this mindset of automation, right? Like, you want to have control over the system you made, but how do you have control without a dashboard, right? So it's like a very basic, I think everybody will relate, right? Like, even if in business or any side, right, you have to look at some data to make sense of what is going on, right? So observability is that for software, right? So yeah, so I think like after Gojek, I got some time. I was exploring what to do more in cloud space. Observability is something I've been involved in for a really long time, and somewhere on Twitter, I found an opportunity that, you know, the work was just getting started. So I was just there.
Right.
I contributed to some snippets of the paper. Yeah, that. But that's the space that I really enjoy because at Gojek, right, we got to see a scale a lot. Right. And and lot of that work, like we were doing several million transactions every day. And like for a good period of time, our whole company was focused on profiling the stack because scale was increasing every few weeks. Right. So that's where my interest into observability came. Right. And ended up writing that.
Okay. Awesome. Like, you know, quite a fellow nerd you are, right? That is good to know. And I love how, you know, you've basically found a way to go back to what you really like doing and what brings you joy time and again. I think that is something a lot of people forget on their journey, which kind of takes me to my next question. That, you know,
I
you
think that's
mentioned...
the point.
Yeah, it is. It is the point. And people forget that, right? I think in the daily humdrum of things, people just tend to forget that. You've mentioned, you know, you've experienced, obviously, like any entrepreneur, I think, who's been around for a while, everybody experiences failure and success, right? Obviously, the scale is different for everybody, and that is absolutely okay. But what lessons did you say learn from your failures as well as your successes? And how has that kind of shaped your personality over the years as an entrepreneur?
I think like a lot of learnings are quite latent, right? Like a lot of things, a lot of time has happened. It's very, you know, difficult to pinpoint what exactly learned from that, right? But because every time I look back, I'm thinking something differently about it, right? Like,
right,
as time
yes.
is going
that,
by,
that
you
happens,
think,
yeah.
Right?
The way you're perceiving it, the way you're perceiving
yeah.
the future, the past as well changes, right? Because of the experience that you've had in the present or whatever experiences are shaping your personality, that kind of changes your perspective on what has happened as well.
Exactly. Because the observer has changed, right?
Yeah,
so,
exactly. The observer has changed.
Right. The observability joke, this was... but yeah.
Right. So, but if you had to absolutely pinpoint one or two lessons, like from your failures as well as successes for fellow entrepreneurs, what would those be?
So I think like over time, a philosophy of startups have been emerging for me, right? Like as in like how I perceive management in startups, right? Like a management strategy, whatever you want to call it. Right? There's no good word for these things anyways. Right. So I think there's some philosophy of mine have been emerging for me, right? So I typically call it a one-true model, right? So I believe like, you know, a lot of times, I think this... a lot of people who are doing startups have action bias, right? They are very trigger happy. They are very active and they want to do things quickly and want to see results very quickly, right?
Right.
So, but I am much more of a minimalist on the other way around, right? Right. Because I try to counter that because sometimes you start a chain reaction, right? Like you start some activity, it becomes a chain reaction, and then some few weeks steps down the line, you're wondering why I'm doing it. It happens it happens all the time, right? So I just call it like, you know, a company needs to have a one true model, right? Basically, it's a model is nothing but a construct of words through which I can explain every activity that we are doing, right? Like whatever happens through the one true model, right? Whatever anybody is doing in the company should be able to be explained through that model, right? And again, right, like how do we make that model, right? Like because blank canvas is the scariest thing, right?
Right.
So
yeah.
I just thinking every company has only two activities. It is building or selling.
Right. Right.
Right.
That's
everything,
a good way to put it. Yeah. Gives me something
right?
to think about.
Yeah, everything stems from there, right? You can
Absolutely.
always map any activity that is happening in the company back to this, right?
Right. Building or selling. Absolutely.
That's it, right? So like that's how I see job titles also, right? Like I just don't believe, like, either you are a builder or you're a seller, right? That's, you have to be on the one side in the company, or you're a unicorn on the both side, right? That's brilliant, right? Everything in the middle of building and selling is a communication flow problem, right? It's just a, how do I flow the information from what needs to be sold to what needs to be built, right? It's just that, right? So, and that is the higher, larger mental model I carry when I try to think about management in startups.
Right. No, I think that's a very wonderful way of looking at it. And, you know, when you, it's very easy, like as a fellow entrepreneur, I think I've been doing this for a while as well. What happens is that, you know, you get kind of stuck in the micro at times. And then there will be times when, you know, you're getting, you're making it too complicated for yourself and the way you're kind of perceiving how you want to move forward or what you want to do. But ultimately, it just falls into these two buckets. You know, you're either building or you're selling. And at times, you're doing both, you know. But ultimately, I think as long as your actions are aligned with these two buckets, then you're doing okay.
Exactly, right? And you need to just largely know what activity I'm doing right now, how is it contribute on the either side, so you can decide how anxious you want to be about it, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. That's true. Like, what is perhaps, you know, your higher priority at that moment?
Exactly.
And then, you know, if you're just being truthful to yourself about it. Because, again, this is something that I've seen with a lot of entrepreneurs, myself included, when things are like moving too fast, and it's very easy to start getting busy but not being productive. And 100%. You know, as long as you're perhaps aligned with either of these buckets, then, and you can be honest to yourself about it, then I think then, you know, you're on the right path.
Exactly, right? And anyways, work happens in serially, right? It can be planned concurrently, but happens only one thing at a time, right? That's always
absolutely.
The case.
That's very true. You can plan anything and everything, but, you know, obviously it'll happen in a sequential order. So
planning is always multiverse.
that is true. Okay, so now coming back to Shovel, what is like the next big milestone for you guys, and how do you perhaps see the company contributing positively to the to the decentralized space?
So I think this year we have spent mostly our energy into, you know, going deep into the core of the problem, right? So I think like most of our focus was on building and much less on selling, right? So a lot of building required us to have a lot of partnerships and relationships with the people who are also building it. Building never happens alone. Building happens with a peer group, always, right? Everything happens with a peer group, by the way, right? So finding the teams we want to work with, finding the, taking some core decisions on the technology stack that we want to go around, right? So a lot of that happened this year. So another thing that we also follow is we have I frequently write update note, right, where I like to describe the whole model again, right, so that we can say we are anchoring on top of this. So based on that, right, currently we are about to ship the version of the protocol. Right now what we have live is a white paper, right? I think white paper is enough to find peers, but white paper is not enough to take the next step as a company, right? So in the coming few weeks we are about to launch soft launch, product, like nothing big marketing activity wise, right? All we want to do is we want to ship out the CN right now and try to start gathering market feedback, right? And also like work with different larger chain ecosystems and see how we can align our objectives together, right? So that's the immediate focus for us.
Awesome. Those are bigger goals, and those are the very foundation that you want to build the whole thing on. So, all the best to you guys on what you're doing, because, again, I think what you're building is very pertinent, and it adds to, the solution for adoption in Web3 in one way or another. So that is something that, you know, I feel very excited about any which way. So now let's like zoom out a little bit before we kind of wrap this up. What is your perception regarding the next bull run, and what are the kind of niches you feel would do really well in the next bull run?
Okay. So I think like, I think that again, right, like there are like, you will always hear noise more around like stuff like, you know, Ethereum scaling through Eigenlayer or MPC as a, and ZKP as a technology, these things coming up.
Right. Right.
Like these are definitely hot for this bull run.
Right.
But I'm pretty much more interested in when do we see consumer adoption of the Web3, right? I think we are pretty close on that side. It looks like technology is kind of ready, but products are lacking. Right? Like, so you, for every frontier technology, they're only asking one question, right? Is technology ready, or like productization has not happened, right? So I think
right.
So this is the question I was pursuing this year, right? So from what I understand, like I think technology is kind of ready. Like a lot of narratives around, you know, the wallet experience is not great, or you know what to do, like you know, a lot of end user problems, right? I think like this bull run, next 1 or 2 years, I'm very bullish that we are going to see some breakout of some product, right? Like I'm yet to pinpoint which one, but it feels like it. Some product will see end user adoption.
Basically utility based products, I think, that you know, something that can become a part of intrinsically of like the user's life on a day-to-day basis, and that would be the kind of products that will bring in adoption as well as a plethora of more people in the Web3 space. That is what I truly believe, and this is a sentiment that has been echoed, by the way, in the last few weeks by all the founders and stakeholders that I've spoken to. Everybody seems to believe that you know, we've kind of done infrastructure. A lot of people are building it, and that's great. You know, that is obviously required, because otherwise, you know, you cannot build anything of substance if the infrastructure is not there. But right now, if you're looking at adoption, then the only way to get adoption is to basically create an application, or have an application, or a bunch of applications that become a part of the user's day-to-day life.
Exactly, right? And those applications will not say crypto, by the way. Right, because
users don't use
product because of crypto.
Absolutely, yeah. It will. There'll be apps like no other. Like you know, the apps that are there in Web 2, and they will be pretty similar to those applications. They'll be utility based applications, and it wouldn't really matter that they are being. Obviously, that becomes like a selling point for us, and it becomes for founders. It is like the USP, that it is built on decentralized technology, but the user really doesn't care. Like I think that is again something that a lot of us have realized, that the end user really doesn't care about so much about, you know, these ethos, as you said, whether philosophies associated with freedom and, you know, just decentralization. Those are not things that the user is actively day-to-day thinking about privacy, about, you know, decentralization.
No, philosophy always need to be packaged in a product, right? It can never, like, you are anyways going to package a philosophy, right? Explicit or implicit, right? But philosophy itself is not a product.
Exactly. It cannot be a product. And the product itself has to be that, you know, it kind of takes in all of those philosophies and creates something that is adding convenience and value to the user's life.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think I am so very bullish on this space, and especially like, you know, these were like one of the my factors of picking up DCN, right? Because I felt most of the consumer behavior on the internet is around social and like browsing and, you know, that kind of activity, not financial activities that we see in DeFi, right? Like a Zerodha option trader is a very long tail guy on the internet,
right?
Right.
Yeah. And
so I think that's where I feel the space is, and I'm extremely excited of what happens in the next 2 years.
I completely agree. I think you know, we are very aligned, and mostly the founders that I've talked to in the recent weeks, they've all of them seem to be very aligned with this thought process, which is wonderful to know. And that kind of makes me even more excited for the space in general, because when everybody is sort of thinking about the same things, great things are bound to come out. So I'm really looking forward to what the builders are going to really showcase, because we've been building for some time, and now it's, once the bull market hits, I think there'll be much more noise, and a lot more products would be uncovered that are more utilitarian in nature.
Absolutely, absolutely. I think this is the cycle for it.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I've, again, like I keep saying this in almost all conversations I have, and my listeners must think, I have the same dialogue, but honestly, I really lost track of time. These conversations are usually so insightful and brilliant that I just don't remember, looking at the clock ever. So now we are out of time again. And before we wrap this up, I would love to ask you, Shobhit, one question that I like asking everybody who comes on this show. You basically, again, been on the other side where you were building for Web2, and now you're building for Web3, and you made that pivot. What would be your two, three suggestions for people who are perhaps looking to do something similar to start living on blockchain?
Okay, so I think, like, I would say, like, till the space is quite early and you have to actually build things to really understand it. So I think reading goes so far. You have at some point, everybody has to take a plunge and actually, like, try to play with the software, right? Like make a toy project, right? I think reduce the stake, make a simple toy project that you see where it makes sense, right? I think that is how all great things have started, with something toy, something fun, something toy. Have fun, right? Play with the technology,
Yeah,
right? If you
absolutely.
like it, continue. If you don't like it, don't continue, right? There will
Yeah,
always be another time to play with it, right?
absolutely. I
So,
think, yeah, tinker with
if you
it,
are
like,
in
get
it,
your hands dirty.
exactly. And if you are in it, then I will just say, show up every day. That's it.
Show up every day. That is very, very important. I think, again, something that people tend to forget. Show up every day. It's the most simple suggestions and advice that are the most tactful, and that kind of really have like a huge impact and a compounding impact in your life. Showing up every day is a very good way to, for us to wrap this up. So show with any parting words before we close this particular recording.
No, I think that's pretty much it. I think show up every day is quite apt.
Yeah, I think showing up every day is quite an apt way to close this. Thank you so much once again, Shobhit, for making the time to speak to us and to speak to our listeners. This is a very insightful conversation, and the way you kind of beautifully described what you guys are building, because and I was trying to find some chinks in your armor, because this is, as you said, this is an engineering facing product that you're creating, but because these are listeners who are dialing in, and I wanted them to resonate with what you're building. That's why I kept like going after the mission and the messaging. But I think you did a wonderful job, and I'm very, very grateful you could make the time.
Thank you, Tarusha. I enjoyed talking to you.